Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Dr. Stuart Squires. I'm the Associate Director of the Center for Faith and Culture and Associate Professor of Theology at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. The Center for Faith and Culture brings the Catholic voice to the ongoing conversation about the meaning of life and the liberty and pursuit of happiness we hold in common as Americans. Today's guest is Tim Mott. Tim is the general manager of KSHJ AM 1430 in Houston, Guadalupe Radio. He's been the general manager for over a year, but has been in the media business for about 14 years. He's a convert to Catholicism in 2014. First of all, Tim, thank you very much for joining me.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you for coming by.
I'd like to talk about Catholic media in general, and then, or specifically, and then in general, sort of the media landscape today, which is always a hot button issue. So, what would you say is the role that Catholic media can play in our cultural, in our Catholic discourse, and in our larger public discourse in society today? What is the role or the function or the objective of Catholic media today?
Okay. Well, from my perspective, just looking at it with the kind of the experience that I have of just trying to promote this radio station and seeing how different media outlets, mostly in the EWTN orbit, kind of work, I'd say that there's two main functions that Catholic media serves. One is internal towards the church, and the other is external towards the world. So internally, Catholic media is the best way, I think, to bring your faith into your daily life. Mm-hmm. It's easy, of course, to go to Mass and then check out, and you almost turn your religion off when you get back to your regular weekly life. If you're not doing your daily prayers, you're not doing your daily Mass, you could just forget about it. Catholic media sticks with you during those times, especially radio and audio. Audiobooks are huge right now. Podcasts like this one are huge. And so this is a way to work that into your routine so that you don't forget about your faith. Mm-hmm. And it goes deep. And it's very educational. So it's a great way to improve your understanding of the faith at the same time with very little effort. So that's the internal function of it.
Before we get to the external,
yeah.
And I say this as a podcast host, let me push you back on that a little bit. We are an incarnational people. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when we talk about things like listening to Mass on radio or watching Mass on television, or just, as you say, prayers, saying the rosary or something like that, that's not an incarnational experience, right? Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, between the ears, right? So then how is that problematic? You said that you think that Catholic media, Catholic radio is the best way of doing this, but isn't there some sort of deficiency in that medium?
Oh, yeah. I don't mean that it's a way of I don't mean that it's a sacramental in the sense of bringing that grace into your life. What I mean is it's a way to work your faith into your routine. Mm-hmm. So that as you're on your daily commute or as you're washing the dishes or something, you're not turning off your mind in relation to your faith. You're actually reminding yourself of that. And people who listen to the radio do more prayers. Mm-hmm. People who subscribe to Catholic podcast, they're doing that because they want their faith to be stronger, and that's going to increase their motivation to do actual devotions, actual sacraments in their daily life.
Mm-hmm. And then the external, I cut you off there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The external, that is a public witness. So the fact of Catholic media, just the fact that newspapers and radio and TV exist is a witness to people who are not Catholics. Now, there's the awareness issue. Like some people out there might not know that EWTN exists. But I would say that in my own experience as a non-Catholic, I knew that there was a Catholic nun out there who had a cable TV station. I never watched it, didn't know her name, but I knew that the Catholic Church was in the media. And so that was a witness that was just there in the back of my mind. It also provides a forum and a voice for the Catholics, for the Catholic perspective to reach the rest of the world. It's not like we have our closed meetings where we can like a Bible study. Mm-hmm. Like we can have a Bible study where we're all on the same page and all understanding the Catholic point of view. But that's not going to expose that to the outside world. But a public forum where there's media that anyone of any faith or non-faith can tune into. It's there for them to get our perspective. You're just not going to get that in other media.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about Catholic media as a witness to non-Catholics. Let's talk a little bit more about that, specifically the evangelization part of that witness. So what is the power or the influence or even opportunity that Catholic media offers for evangelization that other ways of evangelization can't offer? So, for example, an earlier episode on this podcast, I interviewed a street evangelist, Stefan Shivko, here in Houston, right? So that's a form of evangelization, but it's obviously a different form. So how is Catholic media, Catholic radio, a unique form of evangelization?
Well, that's easy just when you think about the difference between individual conversations versus mass broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And that's the same for any topic. Evangelization is really always about that personal relationship. If, like you said earlier, media is not an incarnational experience. Mm-hmm. It kind of takes you out of your body. So evangelism is primarily about that personal relationship, one-on-one. But media, what it does is it reaches people that are otherwise unreached. Mm-hmm. We have had people just randomly scanning the radio dial,
sure,
who end up on our station, and something in that, God uses that to plant a seed. It catches them in a moment when they're unguarded, and God uses that to draw them into a relationship. It sends them, they call us up, and they ask the tough questions of our apologist on the air, and then they end up going to a parish later on, mm-hmm, and actually encountering actual Catholics. So there's using all means at our disposal. Media reaches people, and it stands as that public witness, like I said before. But think about the parable of the sower.
Mm-hmm.
He's casting the seed across the whole field, and so some of it falls on good soil, some of it falls on bad soil. We're casting that seed. We're just putting it out there for everyone to hear, and God is the one that brings the increase.
Let's talk about the other side of that coin then. So what are the limitations or restrictions to media, Catholic media, for the purpose of evangelization?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing. It's that lack of personal relationship there. You know, with radio, we try to mitigate that by actually having call-in shows.
Mm-hmm. And
it's an old way of doing radio. It's been around for decades.
Sure.
So that's kind of proven that people really do get something out of that interaction. And even just listening to a caller call in, you're still hearing an actual interaction between people. But that limitation is that it's superficial.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go deeper. You can't speak into someone's life from experience because you're talk to them once on the phone on the radio. I'd say that that's probably the biggest weakness, is that lack of actual personal interaction.
So you talk about this sort of time-tested element of the call-in show. That brings to mind sort of you know, there's always this standard tried and true methods. But of course, also during, you know, in the past 20 years or so, there's been an explosion of different types of media, social media, blogs, podcasts. So how has this sort of invention of new forms of media forced Catholic media, Catholic radio, to innovate?
Well, that's the different habits of people. As they as the technology changes, people's habits change.
Mm-hmm.
Audio is still a powerful medium, mm-hmm. no matter how it's delivered, whether it's podcast, audiobooks, radio, you know, CDs, whatever. Audio is still going to be a powerful medium. And so radio has an advantage of a uniqueness that others don't have in being terrestrially based.
Mm-hmm.
It's a geographical location. For instance, this radio station reaches Houston, and it reaches everyone in Houston simultaneously. Whereas if you were listening to a podcast, then everyone's listening kind of individually on their own time. We're recording this now, but it's going to be heard later, and then other people might be listening to it, you know, years down the road. So this podcast will have more of a long tail, but that radio is immediate. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's immediate and simultaneous and limited to a geography.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an advantage. Does that kind of answer the question?
Well, or? I was just trying to think more about innovation, right? I mean, this, as the old saying goes from the capitalists,
right.
like the competition breeds innovation, right? So, again, you talk about the tried and true methods of call-in radio show, but now you've got more competition out there, right? There's more more offerings, more media offerings. And so how has that increased competition forced Catholic media, Catholic radio to innovate, do things new or different, and not just rely on those old ways of doing things?
Well, the thing is that we're not married to the medium itself. As an evangelistic apostolate, we can branch out into those other mm-hmm. media as resources allow and as the opportunity allows. So radio has used, when, matter of fact, you're looking at our webcams right here,
mm-hmm.
we're not just radio. We simulcast
right.
to Facebook Live for our show. So as we're doing our radio shows, which is primary because that's what it has been,
mm-hmm.
We're adding on elements. We're adding on social media elements. We have we just redid our website. We've repodcasted most of our programs and are looking into starting some new podcast-only content as well. But the thing is, we want to get that message to mm-hmm. to as many people as possible using whatever means are at our disposal. So because there's more competition out there, it doesn't mean that we can't compete in those realms.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping the message and the end goal focused on evangelism and, mm-hmm. and bringing souls into the kingdom. If radio goes away, that doesn't mean the message goes away. We just
sure.
change with it. But also, in a general sense, the proliferation of blogs and social media and even talk radio back when it was like the Rush Limbaugh days,
mm-hmm.
like that was when that was a new thing, that broke open the idea of a authoritative, controlled media
mm-hmm.
where you didn't have other options. You had three TV stations
right.
that where you got your news, and there was no alternate for
mm-hmm.
that. So having a more democratic or you know, populist, I guess, kind of media where anyone can publish and it's up to them to, you know, get compelling content to get an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That actually helps the Catholic the message, because now we can compete with that, and we don't have to go through a controlled media.
Mm-hmm. And do you? So you talked about podcasting as well. Do you and Facebook Live? Do you live stream the radio all around the world as well? Or
mm-hmm. yeah,
okay.
it's the same kind of thing.
And what kind of feedback do you get when you do the Facebook Live or the live streaming? And then how does that feedback shape again the way that you do what you do?
Cross promotion, really. Trying for each medium to enrich the other. So on the air, Joe McLean, the host, would say, oh, if you would like to see our Facebook video, you can go to our Facebook page. And that way, people that are listening know that they have that option.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Facebook viewers increase. And if people are watching it on Facebook, then they can, and they have to, you know, run out to their car to get in to go to work. They could turn it on the radio right there, or flip it over to the app. We've got it on our app, the live stream and the podcast. And so each of those media enriches the other.
We are in the midst of the COVID pandemic crisis. Hopefully yes. The middle. Hopefully it's not, you know, the beginning, and it'll be over sooner rather than later. We in the university's higher education have radically been affected by this, and we're thinking, you know, classes for us actually start on Monday. So, and I think the effect of COVID on universities and university sports has been very publicly. Just this week, we saw Notre Dame University, you know, the sort of Catholic flagship university, and University of North Carolina Chapel Hill sort of had to slam on the brakes. So in higher education, the effects of COVID has been very visible. Mm-hmm. What has COVID done to Catholic radio, Catholic media? How has that forced you, again, to innovate or do something different?
Well, what's interesting is that radio really shines in a crisis. There's a reason that the national emergency alert system goes out over the radio. Mm. It's because of that what I said earlier about reaching a geographical area instantly and simultaneously. So when people are more separated and they can't go to each other, what did all the churches do? Mm-hmm. They started broadcasting their masses.
Sure.
Even though that's not the fullness of the way to receive the sacrament, it's a way to keep people connected to their faith. And radio, we really have not had to change very much to be able to do that, because that's what we've been doing all along.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole means of existence is bringing people that are separate together. And so one thing I guess that's really helped us is being able to kind of direct that conversation a little bit, remind people that of how important it is to get back to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just settle down on the radio here. We're going to keep telling people that.
That yeah.
You can't just stay home and listen to the Mass. It's great for your commute, but you got to get back to church. If fortunately for us, since we operate in the Guadalupe Radio Network on a very small staff, it's me and two other people here at our studio, we haven't had to change operations very much at mm-hmm. all. It's very low traffic through the studio. We can do a lot of stuff remotely. Mm-hmm. We do phone interviews and video interviews, and the hosts that you hear on EWTN, many of them are separated by, they're in different cities.
Sure.
Broadcasting from home studios. So the operations don't change, but it actually is a better opportunity for us to connect with people.
You mentioned people not going to Mass because of COVID. There are basically two predictions about what will happen after COVID is over. One is that people won't go back to Mass because they've gotten into the habit of not going. And the other is that this quarantine experience is stoking that hunger, that fire, that desire for the Eucharist, and it will drive more people back to Mass. Do you have any thoughts, or have you heard anything in your work about which of those two you think might happen?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily. I don't have any specific knowledge from mm-hmm. my work, but I guess just on a personal level, what I see is that both happen. There's the people that, you know, were kind of checked out to begin with, and this is an excuse for them to just kind of forget the whole thing, and bad habits will crop up. But then I've seen lots of people that are just more hungry for it. And if you think about it a little bit in the same way that persecution kind of, you know, strengthened the church mm-hmm. in the early centuries,
sure.
This kind of could do the same thing. The kind of weeding out the people who are not committed mm-hmm. and strengthening those who are committed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could end up with a smaller, leaner, but more intense and strong church.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just what I see mm-hmm. happening. And who knows, maybe that is a good thing that God's going to use this crisis for. What we really need, though, is strong leadership from the bishops. And unfortunately, we haven't got strong leadership in any area of our culture right now.
That's true.
Because this is such a weird, vague kind of threat. It could be anywhere. Any of us could get it, but it could be nowhere. Like, you know, who knows how things are going. I think in higher education, it's probably you're seeing a lot of that impact. But is that from actual sickness, or is that just from the precautions?
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a tangent, but you said something that I'd like to talk about, this idea of lack of leadership today. And I don't want to, you know, turn this into a let's point at the president.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We in the Center for Faith and Culture offer a course on leadership. I actually recently reread Erasmus of Rotterdam's The Education of a Christian Prince. So in the past year or so, even before this COVID crisis, I've been thinking a lot about this question of leadership. And I know others in the business world have been thinking about that. But what are your thoughts when you say, again, not just politically, but in our culture today, there's a lack of leadership? Why do you think that is? What are possible solutions on how can we get better, stronger leadership in the church, outside the church?
Well, I'm not sure what the answer is. I think part of the problem actually stems back to what we were talking about earlier about that proliferation of multiple channels of media.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of advantages, but one of the disadvantages is that now it's harder to find that actual authority figure who you can actually trust. And that trust was probably somewhat misplaced when media was more controlled.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have way more options competing for your attention, competing for your loyalty. So what I see is that I personally experience so many different narratives coming at me that I don't know necessarily how to parse them. I've done a lot of work on my own. My journey into the Catholic Church was a search for true authority, and so that I found it in the magisterium of the Church, and I have done that work to have confidence in the teaching of the Church. But if that's not proclaimed to the people who are more casual about it, then they're not necessarily going to have a strong pull to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like all of our leadership, bishops, politicians, teachers even, are experiencing the same kind of thing. Business leaders seems they've set up a profit as their number one focus.
Right.
And so that's their guiding principle. And if there's no moral leadership there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like this vacuum of no clear message.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't seek it out and find it yourself, I don't think it's going to be handed to you anymore.
Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. So I agree with what you're saying about sort of the vacuum of leadership. I'm also curious, though, you said that part of the reason you became Catholic was the authority of the magisterium in its office. Again, these days maybe...
It's not the people.
Like, yeah.
my wife and I
right.
Came into the Catholic Church after all the sex scandals broke,
yeah,
and
sure.
after we'd been anti-Catholic growing up, and
mm-hmm.
so we knew all the bad stuff about the Catholic Church before we came in, but that's where God was leading us, and you go where the truth is.
So talk more about that. How do you navigate this? You see in the business world, in the political world, in the ecclesial world, a lack of leadership. And you see what was going on in the Catholic Church because of the sex abuse scandal, and yet you were talk about this idea of being convinced about authority and leadership despite the problems with it, such that you come into the church.
Well, the reality is that Jesus is the leader. I mean,
sure.
He's the king. Christ is Jesus is Lord. That's our gospel in a nutshell. And so when I became convinced that the authority of the Catholic Church derived from Jesus himself in a way that other denominations simply don't have, or don't even claim in some ways, then I had to come into the Catholic Church because there was nowhere else to go. The Orthodox Church has some sort of claim on it as well, but we were clearly being led into the Latin Rite. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really what it came down to is... your question was more about...
you saw on the one hand a lack of leadership and authoritative leadership in the world right now, and yet you decided to become Catholic. I'm sure it was more complicated or multiple reasons, but one of them was a draw because of authority and leadership. So you have this sort of weird tension or dance of the not seeing it, but then being drawn to it.
Yeah, the hierarchy does have... the authority doesn't subsist in the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. The hierarchy is merely an organization of it. Mm-hmm. The authority is from Jesus, and the hierarchy actually kind of has some checks and balances in it that I didn't see in the kind of cult of popularity that a lot of evangelical churches can fall into. Mm-hmm. There's so many good devout evangelicals that are focused on Jesus, and that's their guiding star. But it's easy to end up with, awkward interpretations of scripture, idiosyncratic interpretations, or a cult of personality, like even good people like Rick Warren, it kind of, you feel like sometimes it gets still focused too much on the pastor.
Sure.
Whereas I noticed in the Catholic Church, the priests, they switch around every couple of years.
Right,
like
right.
The parish itself is very continuous, but the priests are almost... I don't want to say interchangeable. That has too many negative connotations. But, they move around.
Yeah.
And bishops, too. And so even the Pope will change, every now and then. And the Jesus' authority remains consistent in the midst of all that. That's what made me come to the Catholic Church, seeing all the negative stuff.
Sure. Great tangent, but let's get back to...
We'll go back to
let's
the media.
Let's get back to the media. So... Catholic media is often criticized, and I'm thinking more about movies than radio, and even in the arts, thinking about sort of popular music, it's often criticized for not being as sophisticated as secular media, secular movies, secular music. What are the challenges in competing with secular media?
I guess I'd have to tackle that from this radio perspective. Because I don't have any experience in making movies.
Sure.
But that's been a perennial problem. That's not just a Catholic problem. Mm-hmm. Like most Christian media has the same issue. Like Christian music, you think about like the CCM in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, if you like Metallica, you'll love this band.
Right.
It's like it's derivative. That's the problem with that kind of art. Is that the secularists are moving forward and, they've got that profit motive or whatever agenda they have they're following. And so they just go for it. And then we're like, oh, well, we got to get in on that too.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it for a vision. I'm doing it because they're doing it. And so it's a bit derivative. And so I don't want Catholic media to fall into that. Mm-hmm. I see genuine... all those advantages we talked about before with radio and audio and podcasts, and there are genuine means there we don't have to do it just because a secular station is doing it.
Right.
We're doing it because it's a great tool for reaching people that aren't otherwise reached and for being that public witness and for tilling the ground of apologetics and knocking down those obstacles that will keep people from the church. So to keep Catholic radio, I think, specifically from falling into that, we have to be proactive. I just researched a little bit about Maximilian Kolbe and his he gave a speech to his monastery, his brothers there at the monastery, when they started their first broadcast. And one of the things that he said was, these media are going to be used for harm. And we can't fall behind those who are using them for harm.
Sure.
We have to go and use them for good as best as we can. And so that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Sure.
Just imagine if, like in Houston, I mean, this has actually happened with the classical radio station. Now, classical music lovers have no station on the air in Houston to go to now. Imagine if that happened with Catholic radio.
Yeah.
You're lucky that that Houston now has two Catholic radio stations. Mm-hmm. Our real competitor is Relevant Radio, but more power to them. but imagine if Catholic radio was not on the air in Houston. What would you have? You'd have sports, you'd have news, you'd have music.
Right.
But no Catholic radio. There's that witness would be lacking there. And so we have to do the best that we can to make the best programming available. And we have replaced programs specifically like recorded programs that were really awesome. Mm-hmm. It was a pastor, Father John Ricardo, I should say, from Ave Maria Radio. He had a great program. He's one of the best speakers that we've had on the air. But his program during the drive time hour was recorded, and it was cycling through like the same 50 programs or so. And so we ended up replacing that with a live program because that's better radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're constantly making those improvements to try and make this as dynamic as possible. And that's why I think Catholic radio is being successful in their competition.
Yeah, I agree with your comment about it. It often is derivative. It's something that I've just never understood is why and when did that happen? Because for thousands of years, we were the cutting edge painters and musicians and sculptors, and then all of a sudden we're sort of trying to play catch up. I blame
all of our modern problems on the Enlightenment. I mean, that's got to be it.
That's a good point. There's a fantastic book I like from Dr. Brad Gregory out of Notre Dame. It's called The Unintended Reformation. He backs it up a little bit and says, well, the real problems start with the Reformation.
Of course.
But then the Enlightenment itself is a...
kind of a product of that?
Yeah, product is a good word, okay. I think. Sort of first step. And then when you go from the Enlightenment to this postmodern world, getting back to your comment earlier about all these meta-narratives coming at us at the same time, and we can't really believe in any of them, and how do we choose which one? It's certainly one of the markers of this postmodern world we live in. But I agree with you. One of my friends, he's a professor, and he when he's with his students, he sort of jokingly calls it the Endarkenment, right? It's not the Enlightenment. It's the Endarkenment. The media in general in our culture today is often derided, and this both on the left and the right. Right, Donald Trump calls it fake media,
fake news. Yeah,
but the left seems to be as deeply suspicious of it as well. What must Catholic media do to sustain its integrity in the eyes of our society in light of this sort of onslaught to the media today?
I think faithfulness to the magisterium is the number one thing. We have a huge advantage in that we have revealed truth from God Himself. I would expect a Muslim radio station to say the same thing about the Quran, but let everyone take his stand at where he sees the truth, and let the chips fall where they will. That's the advantage we have, is if we proclaim the truth according to the magisterium and the gospel and the scriptures, we can't go wrong with that. The more faithful we can stay to that. The trick is doing the media well, not falling, not becoming sloppy in your delivery of it just because, oh yeah, well, since I'm reciting the catechism, I don't have to be winsome about it.
Right.
No, you still have to do good radio, and you still have to do good media. But if you just stay faithful to the magisterium, then it's going to win.
Mm-hmm. In several recent video posts, I'm a big fan of Bishop Robert Barron, including his most recent keynote address at the 2020 Napa Institute. Bishop Barron has shed some light on what he considers to be a serious problem in the Catholic internet and the media landscape, and that's specifically sort of an ugly and uncharitable discourse of Catholics attacking other Catholics. What do you make of this sort of contentious fighting in our Catholic public discourse and the Catholic media, the Catholic blogosphere? How should Catholic media refocus so that we can have a healthy dialogue?
Yeah, that's a tough question because it's an easy trap to fall into, and the devil is definitely going to exploit that at any every given opportunity. So I think speaking the truth in love is the same. It's back to basics. Mm-hmm. You got to get back to what Christ called us to. Now, Jesus wasn't afraid to use strong language,
right.
Even calling out his own. I think of all the Jewish sects, I think he was probably closest to the Pharisees.
That's right.
Those were the ones that he criticized the harshest.
That's right. For being hypocrites.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so it's okay to call that out when you see it,
mm-hmm.
but Jesus did it out of love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jesus loved the Pharisees and Nicodemus when he came to him, and Joseph of Arimathea, and he welcomed them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do the same thing. We have to follow that example, speak the truth, and don't waver on that, but above all, to do it out of charity.
Mm-hmm.
If you're cutting down someone,
mm-hmm.
No matter who they are, whether they're Catholic or not, you're not doing it in the right spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that deserves that vitriol, and we don't even have authority to have that kind of vitriol, is the devil and the spiritual forces that we fight against. And even St. Michael himself does mm-hmm. not cast down Satan on his own power. He does it by the power of God. And so we have to submit ourselves to God's Spirit, to God, the Holy Spirit.
How do we discern that? I mean, one could, I think, rightly argue when Jesus calls the Pharisees hypocrites, that doesn't sound too charitable, or the intent is charitable. So how do we know when someone is using strong language, prophetic language, like Amos, like mm-hmm. John the Baptist, like Jesus himself? What's authentically prophetic language, and what is just ugly nastiness, from a sort of twisted soul? How do you determine the two?
A lot of times you have to go by feel, I think,
mm-hmm.
because you could also analyze it logically. Not everyone has been equipped with those tools, though, in the public.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can analyze it logically, ad hominem attacks are just fruitless.
Mm-hmm.
And so never use an ad hominem attack. Attack the idea, not the person. But if you're not able to do that, you kind of have to pray. And go with your gut. Like, this feels right, or this feels not right. What's the best thing for the person who's being talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I have their best interest in mind or not?
Mm-hmm.
And always, it's really hard to see other people's. We can't judge other people's hearts. We have
sure.
to judge our own hearts. And so the way to change that discourse is to make sure that you, every time you are saying something, are doing it out of charity and not out of hate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Final question. We are a people of hope, specifically hope in the resurrection. So when you look to the future of Catholic media, Catholic radio in particular, what brings you hope?
What brings me hope is innovation. Innovation and the fact that we have the truth, because that message is going to adapt and it's going to go no matter what technology comes along. I bet even TikTok could be used for for Catholic evangelization if
sure.
you get the right people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what gives me hope, is that that we are always going to be there. We're never going to go away. And no matter how much the church is persecuted or censored or derided, God's Spirit is still in us. Oh, I wanted to mention
sure,
earlier,
please.
And this it has bearing here. I heard a podcast from a Protestant podcast,
mm-hmm.
But they were talking about a cheerful theology of Chesterton and Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And it really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chesterton and Lewis, the world's going to defeat us. We are fighting a long defeat, as Tolkien said. But they just had this kind of joy of the Lord
sure.
in the battle, in the doing the apologetics,
mm-hmm.
in their writing, and their in knocking down Bernard Shaw and all the the atheist. But even though they're like, well, we're in the minority and they have the upper hand in culture, but there's a joyfulness about
mm-hmm.
it. And I think that that's one thing that gives me hope. If we can maintain that joy and cheerfulness in our argumentation, in our evangelization, that gives me hope as well.
Well, I think joy is a wonderful place to end this conversation. So, Tim, thank you very much for joining me.
Hey, thank you very much.
Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas.